Hello and welcome to A Mindful Emergence on WPVM-FM. My name is Eddie Lesher, and I'll be joined very soon by my co-host Margaret Kirshner and our special guest for this week. We come to you live every Monday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. at 103.7 on your FM radio dial, or you can stream us globally at WPVMFM.org. And this program is also rebroadcast Thursday mornings from 9 to 10 a.m. Our focus each week is on various aspects of recovery, discussing topics such as addiction, trauma, wellness, healing, self-care, and personal transformation. And our guests take an in-depth and informative look into holistic, evidence-based approaches that can be integrated into daily life. And all our programs are underwritten by A Mindful Emergence, a locally owned LLC that's committed to bringing integrated solutions into addiction recovery and trauma relief, utilizing body-centered mindfulness, self-compassion, and therapeutic movement practices. For more information, go to amindfulemergence.com. And good evening, Margaret, and welcome back to the studio. We missed you last week.
Hi, I'm glad to be back tonight.
Yeah, so unfortunately you were under the weather, but feeling much better.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm on top of the weather.
Yes, absolutely. And at this point, I want to welcome our guest this week. We're excited to have into the studio Jeremy Noble, who's a licensed acupuncturist who practices Chinese medicine at Silver Leaf Natural Medicine here in Asheville. So welcome to WPVM-FM, Jeremy.
Hey, glad to be here.
Yeah. So this is an interesting topic. We have not talked about anything like this, and this is show number 56. And I've been looking forward to exploring Chinese medicine for a couple of reasons. One is to learn more. It's always fun to learn, and we certainly experience that with a lot of our guests. And it's something a little different than what we have talked about. So perhaps you could give our listeners a little bit of an idea. The topic is Chinese medicine, infinite paths to healing. What are some of the things that we'll be talking about this evening?
Well, the infinite paths to healing part, I think, it's the most important part because we are trained to think outside of the box and be open to every possibility, every tool that our clients or our patients, if you will, want to utilize, and we'll be right there with them. We want it to be their road, and it's unique to them. We never look at the same patient twice as we did the last or the next, and therein lies the strength, I believe, of that ancient approach, is being completely present with each patient, with all of their symptoms, but also their background, their genetics, their family line. What do they do for a living? Where do they live? Everything is open for consideration. And also every choice they want to make, whether it's melding their primary care physician with us or using a few other practitioners along with us, that's great. We're ready to be there and be a teammate with them. And that's the infinite part. There is no set way to get where someone needs to go.
There's no rubber stamp kind of formula that that you use. Every situation is unique.
Every situation. And Every time we see a client, we're ready to reassess as if it's a new person. Mm. And that therein, the person is changing in front of you, and you're meeting them where they're at.
And it is really the ultimate of holistic medicine. Yes. in that sense.
It is.
Yeah. So let's talk about your background a little bit. First of all, are you from this part of the country?
Northeastern Ohio.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And so talk about, you know, growing up, what were your interests, and what eventually led you in this direction?
I had very altruistic parents, very caring family. We were in a gospel band. My parents started in the 70s, and it was contemporary. We traveled to cities and ghettos, prisons. So I got to see, by example, helping those who felt forgotten in society, and that was the main crux of the, I think, walking away from my childhood with the desire to help those who don't feel like they have help. Mm. And moving to getting into the Navy was one step that got me into healthcare, being a U.S. Navy hospital corpsman, and got to see a lot of different approaches to healthcare that way, from emergency medicine to field medicine, you know.
How long were you in the Navy?
I was 5.5 years.
Okay.
And 2 days and 36 hours now.
Who's counting? So where were you stationed?
It was Charleston, South Carolina, mm-hmm. and Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, and Okinawa, Japan, and South Korea.
Okay.
So I got to see a little bit of the world there.
So you were an EMT
mm-hmm.
and battlefield medic.
Yeah, the Marines always have Navy hospital corpsmen with them everywhere they go, and you train in to be part of the unit and be there for them when they need you.
Mm. So I have to ask you, did you find yourself in combat situations?
I did not. I was in the window between 94 and 2000.
Okay.
So I was very fortunate.
But you were ready.
I was ready.
You were ready, just in case. So you were with the you were a battlefield medic with the U.S. Marines,
correct.
Even though you were enlisted mm-hmm. in serving in the Navy.
Right. Yeah, the Marines started using hospital corpsmen, I believe, in World War I or shortly after.
Okay. And then you eventually achieved your nursing degree.
Yeah, after I got out, I decided to go to nursing, and I knew that there was a lot of different opportunities, a lot of different avenues of, that I could go. And I ended up doing specializing in cardiovascular surgery, ICU. Mm-hmm. So we recovered heart surgeries, heart transplants. And it was really intense work, and I thought I was going to do it for the rest of my life. And kudos to my colleagues out there who are still doing it.
Wow.
They are tough people, and they're brilliant. But they work really hard.
Oh, yeah. And where were you trained?
That was in Charleston.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I worked in hospitals in Charleston.
You stayed on this side in love with the Southeast.
I did. It was hard not to.
Yeah, yeah. You got that right. And Charleston is such a great town.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So you became a registered nurse.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And how long did you do that?
About 10 years. So, and it was because of the Charleston environment. There were a lot of, I got into Kundalini yoga. I started getting acupuncture there, first from a Chinese practitioner, later from an American practitioner in a clinic, like a community clinic setting. And that's where the disparity and the contrast started to show up, where I was getting you know, help with my sleep issues that were related to work. I was working night shift, but then I, you know, be giving Ambien to an 85-year-old woman on my shift again.
Uh-huh.
And 50% of the time, it seemed like they would go crazy. And now you have to spend all of your night protecting them. And I was started to become confused as why I could have a couple needles put in a couple points on my body and get my sleep under control and sleep better than I had in years. But then I got to use a risky drug for a grandmother that would be just like treating my grandmother that way.
Yeah.
And
you started seeking Chinese medicine to manage your own stress.
Yeah. Cause
and that was the work stress.
The work is very, very demanding. And,
yeah.
You know, you got most hospital based practitioners are working 12 hour shifts, 3, maybe 4 days in a row, maybe more than that if they really are, burning it. So
because of the impact of the treatments that you received, you decided to get trained.
It was kind of both. I was looking to possibly come up to Asheville just because I thought I'd retire here one day. And
who would want to live here, right?
Nobody I know. And but that there became this window where I was getting burnt out at work,
yeah.
and I was looking at possibilities of going for med school or PA or nurse practitioner.
Yeah.
Doctor of naturopathy. I looked at a lot of different ideas, and I just happened to find the school, Dallas Traditions College of Chinese Medical Arts here in Asheville, and it just all clicked that this is what I need to do. I'm going to do it now. I'm selling my house, and I'm doing it. I'm going.
Wow.
And yes, most people in my closer circles thought I'd lost my mind.
Well, that's usually a good sign you're on the right track,
yeah.
when people tell you. Yeah, well, I think Margaret and I have both experienced that.
I can understand. I mean, it was it was solid work, and it had a future.
Yeah,
I could have done it till I retired.
Well, sure. Yeah, I mean, I think anybody who is trained as an RN has pretty much got job security.
Sure.
Yeah, I think there is a shortage, isn't there?
There always will be, as long as the system is built by administrators and not by nurses and doctors,
mm-hmm.
Because they understaff and cause too much stress on whoever is available to work, and they cannot sustain it. It's not sustainable.
So how are your stress levels and sleep now?
Amazing. No, really, really good, because I really enjoy what I do, and if I need any help with sleep, I know which herbs I need to cook up, mm-hmm. you know,
uh-huh.
and I'll do it. And
so you are at Silver Leaf Natural Medicine.
That's right.
So where is that? What is it? And why would someone go there?
Well, it's a full-service Chinese medicine clinic on Liberty Street in Asheville, right down the street from Asheville Yoga Center.
Mm-hmm.
You may know it.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. People should go there for everything. They should, for recovery of surgery, to prevent surgery, to treat anxiety, depression. I mean, the list goes on. If you ever look up the World Health Organization's list of conditions treated by Chinese medicine, the list just goes on and on and on. But why is that? And it's because we just optimize the body. We just specialize in helping the body be at its optimal function and recognizing all the little places where it's not. And that's where the details come in. You can't just pick up on these little things if you don't have training in it. But if you can pick up on it, you can treat it. And if you can treat it, then you could also follow up and see that it's treated. And then people start to tell you all the different symptoms that started to disappear when you went for one particular treatment principle, because they were all part of the same problem.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the system and seeing disease as disharmony.
Yep.
Disharmony in interaction.
Right. Well, everything is about relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Our relationship to our genetics and our family lines, our relationships to where we grew up and what happened to us while we grew up, our relationship to our jobs and what they made us into, and what impact we had on them, our relationship to the cycles that we go through every 7 to 8 years while we're here, where we tend to have big expansions of the 7-year phases, and what they led us to. I would say this last cycle of 7 led me here. You know, I was at my ends. And you'll notice, if you look at national stats, the average homeowner owns their home for only 8 years. That's because people make big, major decisions about every 7 and 8 years. And maybe someone who's listening could think back, well, what happened when I was 7 or 14 or 21 or 20? You'll see that if you didn't make the change, you started thinking about it.
Well, you know what that makes me think about? Saturn return and astrology. Has there ever been any connection between those two?
The connections are endless. They're infinite, right? Where do they stop?
Nothing's not connected.
Tell me where something's not connected.
Yeah, absolutely.
So a little different from our American system, where we have a symptom and we kind of find a book and it's categorized by symptoms.
Right.
And we go to our doctor, we talk about symptoms.
Right.
So it's a little different.
It is, but that's when you're going to the branches. The branch of a disease is the most superficial, obvious symptom, right? The branch means the most external part, but the root is the hidden, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when we start working with clients, we start by eradicating the branch. And whatever tools we need to use, whether it's acupuncture, cupping, herbs, essential oils, massage, meditation, yoga, whatever it takes, it's not the point, right? As long as they all follow the same principle that we're trying to achieve for this person. But as the branch starts to subside, let's say it's anxiety or insomnia, the branch starts to subside. Now it opens the door for the next layer to expose itself. Now that someone has enough energy because they're sleeping, well, then they could their body can reveal the next layer that would never have shown up if they had not had enough rest for the body to do repair work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we go to the root eventually. We transfer the treatment principle away from the branch and start focusing on the root. And that's where it gets really tricky, and that's what makes the difference between a 30-year practice practitioner and a newbie, is how fast they get to the root and how effective they are at keeping the patient involved until they can get to the root.
So if you just joined us, you're listening to A Mindful Emergence on 103.7 WPVM FM and WPVMFM.org if you happen to be streaming us. And Margaret and I are joined in the studio this week by Jeremy Noble, who is a licensed acupuncturist and practices Chinese medicine at Silverleaf Natural Medicine. Our theme this week is Chinese medicine, infinite paths to healing. So let's say, for example, I was experiencing anxiety and someone said, you really ought to go see Jeremy. He's amazing. And I said, okay. And I set an appointment and I walk in. What's probably going to happen first?
Hopefully the trap door doesn't open.
Okay.
But no, you pass that. A short intake, but then when we actually sit down to talk with you, we'll gather your chief complaint, and depending on how complicated your case is, we'll determine how long we talk before we actually start checking signs and symptoms like pulses. Pulses, you would think, are one thing. You find it on the radio pulse, and it's just that pulse. That's what we grow up knowing, right? Mm-hmm. But it's super complex. Not every school of Chinese medicine teaches pulse diagnosis, but it is amazingly insightful at getting us to understand what is going on inside your body. And most likely with anxiety, some of your pulses are going to be very tight and wiry, and they will feel like a guitar string. And that's how a person feels too.
Right? Kind of out of tune.
Yeah, right. So, but you know, when someone has that feeling of a pulse that's a guitar string, you can sense it in their life, that they're holding on to everything, right? That's that tension. Mm-hmm. And that tension's wreaking havoc on every organ and not letting them actually be present because they're probably in fight or flight all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So first step would be calm the nervous system, get them out of fight or flight. And that's where all of these ancient practices, whether it's Qigong or Tai Chi or meditation, yoga, they are all getting you back into parasympathetic mm-hmm. tone, right? And so that's the first step, is opening the door to the body, knowing it doesn't always have to be there in that state. And the key, which was revealed in a recent functional MRI study of an acupuncture point being activated, was that when they initially needled the point, large intestine 4, for all those who know that, the outside of the brain lit up red. And it was just a reaction, just a pain reaction. But when they manipulated the needle to get the body's attention at the brain level, and we would call that achieving Da Qi, the limbic system turned blue on the functional MRI. It shut down. It subdued it. And the scientists in the room were blown away. They'd never seen that before. And the limbic system modulates our pain perception. Mm-hmm. So here we have a system that can modulate your pain perception, and it can separate you from your pain for a little bit to help you gain perspective. And if you only had one treatment, and I know people who have, they could probably point back to it one day and say that something changed then. You know, it might be barely perceptible, but most of the medicine is barely perceptible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one of the things you would do is check the pulse.
Mm-hmm.
I've also understand that in many cases you check the color and shape of the tongue. Is that something you do?
It's another wealth of information. I could probably tell you more than you want to know if you just stuck your tongue out.
About
you
my right tongue.
Now. And I don't want you to do it.
So I could just be insolent and you tell me more than just, Eddie, you're being insolent.
Well, it's the whole body is an environment, right?
Yeah.
So what we see with folks that overthink a lot and ruminate, if you will, and create a lot of internal heat, is when the tip of the tongue will be very red, and it won't often have a coating if it's very severe. And you'll see that in clients. If you have that opportunity, ask them to stick out their tongue. They might think you're, you know, a little bit strange, but if you look at that, especially with people who have a lot of anxiety, you'll see that bears out across the board. It's not a hidden thing at all. And it's just a reflection of, it's a large muscle, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it just happens to be one that's a cross section. So we can show you fluid volume. It could show you the amount of inflammation in the body, or it could tell you somebody's overloaded with fluid and the tongue is very big and pale and swollen. So just from a quick peek at the tongue, you could say, well, I know where we need to start. If it's the thin tongue that's very fluid deficient with a very red tip, we need to clear heat and start nourishing the fluids. If it's the very wide tongue that's kind of blue and swollen, we need to start building heat in this person. And we need to clear that excess fluid that is sticking around, because there's nothing to push it around. There's no internal heat to move it.
And then also the quality of breathing or the sound of the voice, is that something?
Sure, everything matters, yeah.
Okay.
And it goes, but you know, if you'll, when folks are very tired and they don't have a lot of adrenal kick anymore, they will not be able to vocalize very loud because it takes energy to vocalize. So that's just a little, and you'll notice when people start to feel more strength and your treatments are working for them, then they do start to speak louder, and then they realize, oh, I was speaking quietly. I didn't even realize I've been doing it for 10 years, you know?
So I presume then you're running across a wide, wide range of issues, of symptoms. Is there anything that you might say? I mean, what situations, if any, might you say to a potential patient, you know, I really can't help you. I'm going to refer you somewhere else.
That's an interesting question because it also depends on where you work. If you're in a fully integrated hospital, that they do exist, right? I would feel more confident to be able to play my part and also know where they need to go if it's more emergent, you know, and be there for any part of it that I could. But when it's different when you're in an outpatient setting in a clinic, there's already restrictions, even if you were a primary care physician, right? There's only so many things you're going to approach in that situation. But what I like the most is the openness to collaborate with anybody and anybody, you know, that everybody and anybody who needs to be part of that person's care. You'll see, you've probably run across people that are so medicated that you'd probably be scared yourself to take them on immediately at that moment and say, I know what I'm going to be able to do for you, right? There's certain things like that I would be really, I'd be probably more worried about giving them herbs. What I wouldn't be so worried about is doing acupuncture because there are treatments for mania. There are treatments for severe depression that, you know, is coming from a country that used this as their primary mode of care for over 1,000 years, right? In many, many different forms, whether it was battlefield medicine or psychiatric medicine. By seeing the body differently, it gave them the opportunity, let's say if someone was manic, they would do some more extreme treatments than your average person would get. But it could relieve that pressure that they're feeling and immediately bring them down and then be able to start talking to them again. I wouldn't probably want that person to come to my clinic right now. I'd probably rather be working alongside physicians in the ER to do that, you know? But that's not necessarily the setting that's completely open in Eastern the United States. In the Western part of the United States, it's happening more. In some other countries, the integration's happening more.
Well, because you have a background as an RN, that gives you a perspective, perhaps, that some people, some licensed acupuncturists wouldn't have.
Right.
You're in a position where you might spot things... And maybe it'll be a little bit more open. I don't know. I don't know if I'm making an assumption here referring them to Western.
That might be a little bit of an assumption because in Chinese medicine school, we are trained by primary care Western physicians as well that have 20 or 30 years of experience. We have to train on every system and every drug and every side effect as well.
Okay.
So and that's even psychiatric. We have a psychologist who teaches us for a few semesters and. We run through all the psych meds that our patients would be on, the potential side effects. So we understand that a lot, but I guess what makes us feel confident in what we can do is a lot of what those medicines are chasing aren't that difficult to treat in the first place, you know? But sometimes what we do see is that the medicines themselves have stronger side effects than the treatment would by itself.
Well, sure.
If they came that way. If it were just anxiety and they took a certain herbal formula that's been around for a very long time, very successful, that might just give them take enough of that edge off right away for them to start to cool off and reassess, you know, how they interact with the world. And that would be better probably than a lot of symptom controllers where they don't have to learn any new ways of thinking.
How much has Chinese medicine changed? It's what, 2003?
Five.
5,000 years old.
By some accounts.
How much has it changed over that five millennia?
immensely. You could think of almost every 200 years, there was enough change in China to make it unrecognizable from a government standpoint, right? And how many, if in 5,000 years, how many times had that happened then? And they went through their civil wars, and they went through famines, and so it had a lot to, it evolved a lot because of all the pressures of a society growing over that time. So they learned to treat malaria at a certain point when malaria was the bigger problem, right? They learned to treat battlefield trauma when there were huge wars going on with massive armies, right? And those formulas still exist today, and we still use them, and we still modify them as those physicians of that time wrote about. So it's rich because it's been through a lot. Just like, let's say, medicinal plants. Ginseng, for instance. We don't harvest it for 7 years for until it's medicinally ready. But if you think about what it has to go through in 7 years, then it's similar to what we go through. It goes through all the seasons. It goes through hot spells and dry spells and cold snaps, right? It goes through all the conditions that it makes it stronger. And Chinese medicine is just a platform. And as it moves into the West more and more, we're ready to integrate in every way possible. And will help supplement the weaknesses of Western medicine, and Western medicine will help supplement the weaknesses of Chinese medicine. And the Chinese have a saying that goes back probably to the 70s, that China stands on two legs, the new and the old. The new helps the old, and the old helps the new. And that's what they felt about the medicine. It's never a one size fits all. And that is probably, one of the bigger misconceptions is that people feel like when they come to us that it has to be one or the other, and that couldn't be further from the truth. We're prepared to go as far as we can with our tools, but we're also prepared to send you down the road to see a specialist as needed, and also collaborate with that specialist. It's wonderful when they're ready to collaborate back.
Well, that's interesting you say that, and it's very refreshing because I have met, and I'm sure many of our listeners have known people who practiced, shall we say, alternative medicine, sure, as they view it, who have almost an antagonistic view towards allopathic treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Not true.
Yeah.
With
no,
you.
No, because there's that's the all of the above approach. That's the infinite paths mm-hmm. to healing, right? There is no one way. And in very acute cases, especially when someone's already been using a certain medicine for a long time, trying to remove somebody off of a medicine quickly, that's not really our scope in the first place, but they might want that. But trying to change the course of treatment rapidly can bring up a lot of problems, right?
Yeah.
So people that really survive on steroids, I've met them, and I don't think it's the best route for them because it leaves the adrenals shot all the time. But they're pretty much, that's what their body's used to. So who are we to try to shuck all of what's worked for them, even if it's caused tons of side effects? We have to ease into that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's also what they're comfortable with, and a lot of times it's with what their insurance companies will pay for. You know,
gotta be practical.
There's practicality to it, and we have to be flexible. So we do a lot of Qigong in school, and that's mostly to teach us to be flexible and grounded.
Mm.
And that means that you're not dictating. You're meeting somebody where they're at, and you're ready to be their partner in their journey, not to be the person that fixes it for them, but the person that fixes it with them.
And not to impose your opinion and your approach, which unfortunately we find a lot of times with doctors. You go in mm-hmm. and it's like the attitude is, well, I'm the expert.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know anything. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you what to do. And if you don't follow my advice, then you know, there's something wrong with you. I mean, mm-hmm. there is that kind of arrogance very often.
Sure.
I want to get into some of the specific practices. You mentioned Qigong, and mm-hmm. we've talked about acupuncture, obviously, and herbs. And get into some of these and how they're used and what mm-hmm. what they are. But we're going to take a break now. I picked out a piece of music that I'd like to share with our listeners. You're in tune with A Mindful Emergence on 103.7 WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. Margaret and I are joined this week by Jeremy Noble, a licensed acupuncturist, and the topic has been a Chinese medicine, infinite paths to healing. But we're going to take a brief musical break now. I've got a piece of music by Bella Fleck and the Flecktones. Bella Fleck and the Flecktones giving us a musical break here on A Mindful Emergence, a track called Almost 12. This is Eddie LeSure, and from 7 to 8 p.m. every Monday on WPVM, Margaret Kirshner and I are joined by guests who share their unique experience and expertise in an effort to support personal and planetary healing and wholeness. In addition to tuning in at 103.7 FM or WPVMFM.org, Mondays from 7 to 8 p.m. and Thursdays from 9 to 10 a.m. when the program is rebroadcast, all our past programs are archived on our show host page for your convenience. This is show number 56. You can locate our show host page by going to WPVMFM.org and just go to the schedule, select that off the top bar, and once you select this show off the schedule, Mondays at 7, you'll see all the shows listed with a brief description, and they're all there for your convenience anytime you want. You could probably drive all the way across country now. Let's see, 56 hours. Do you think you can make it across country in 56 hours driving straight? I don't know. But if you were going to do such a thing, you could learn a lot by listening to these programs. Anyway, all our shows are made possible by A Mindful Emergence, LLC, an Asheville-based company that offers classes, workshops, retreats, and one-on-one support for individuals living in recovery or wanting to experience recovery. You can look for them online at amindfulemergence.com, as well as on Facebook and LinkedIn. And by the way, you can send comments, questions, or requests to Margaret and I by emailing us at discover@amindfulemergence.com. And by the way, if you're on Facebook, feel free to like A Mindful Emergence or WPVM 103.7. That way you can keep up to date on what's happening. So we're going to return now to our guest, Jeremy Noble, licensed acupuncturist, who's with Silver Leaf Natural Medicine, and he practices Chinese medicine. And we're talking about that particular topic as an infinite path to healing. So we're going to return now. And I was wondering, Jeremy, if you could kind of describe some of these different practices that you use. You mentioned Qigong earlier. Mm-hmm. What is Qigong?
Qigong would be like meditation in motion, opening up all of the channels in the body through motion, building up energy, moving it around to the extremities. You'll see that in countries where they do this late into life, they stay very flexible and maintain a lot of energy. They don't have as much accumulation of toxins and waste products from cellular metabolism stuck in their joints, right? So they don't end up with as much inflammation. They're moving things. They're keeping them open. And that's the flexibility that keeps a person able to adapt to whatever's going on that day. And so Qigong is that is integral in any Chinese medicine program, because you have to be ready for the craziest thing to happen, or for a person to start crying immensely when you access a point that has been a storage area for trauma, per se. And you're not to be moved, right? You're supposed to be grounded and present for them to experience that. And if you're not doing that work, you will be moved. I've had it happen, especially towards the end of a really busy semester when something, jumped out of a patient kind of in a way, like a strong burst of energy. And it was an old memory of theirs that didn't have necessarily a place to go anymore, a place to be. It didn't have a host anymore. And I got knocked over by that kind of thing, that I wasn't doing my work. I was too tired.
So this is a practice that you do, but also that you teach.
I teach it to clients, definitely. Mm-hmm. I don't have any large scale classes. I know some much more worthy teachers out there, some of my friends out there. But it is a practice of bringing your own mind and spirit back to a calm place so that you can be present for somebody, but also not be moved by their, let's say, anxiety or any of the issues that they're dealing with. So you still want to kind of be the baseline meter for them, right? If they're depressed, you don't want to be down. You want to just be right where you're at. If they're anxious, you still want to be right where you're at, so that if anything, they can see the difference of the places and the energy. Mm-hmm. I remember experiencing that in the community clinic I was going to in Charleston, that every time I saw the practitioner, I can tell he was seeing through me in a way. He was seeing things about me that I wasn't able to see. But I also could tell when I was more anxious, he seemed to be the same. And when I was more down, he seemed to be the same. And that's part of that practice that he had to do, he had to do as well when he went to Chinese medicine school. And it let me understand the idea of having a meter, some kind of baseline, right? And now being on the other end of it, being a practitioner, it doesn't mean that he didn't have his own anxieties. Was he able to pay the bills that week or, but in that moment, in his own chaos, was he able to be centered enough for me and yet not be moved by me, right? And my stuff, because otherwise you burn out as a practitioner, right? If you're moved by everything that comes through the door.
Now, is Qigong a martial arts?
Yes, it's a form of martial art. It looked very similar to Tai Chi if you saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've done a little bit of it, the eight pieces of brocade.
Nice.
Yeah. We have a friend who's a very, very good teacher, and he gave us a video, and we've gone through it. And Margaret is more skilled in practicing it than I am, and has actually used Qigong a little bit in some of the mindful movement that she's done. And I also, one of the recovery communities that Margaret and I are involved with, there's a Qigong teacher who comes in and works with the people in early recovery.
Right.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. It's gaining a lot of popularity, and it's cheap and it's effective.
Well, and you can do it at any age.
At any age.
At any age. It's
easily learned.
It's easily learned, and it's not rigorous.
Right.
Talk about herbal medicine, if you can. I know it's a vast subject, but
sure. It's quite, in Chinese medicine, is quite complex. Some of the formulas you'll see can range from just a single herb to a pair. There's a whole range of paired herbs that you can use to start a formula for somebody. Let's say white peony root, bai xiao, and licorice root, gan xiao, together are well known in a form of herbal medicine called duiyao. That just means dual pairings. Those two together treat spasms of muscles and relax the muscles very well. So if that were the problem for a client, you could start with that and build one off of that and bring in herbs to help their other issues at the same time. Or you can go to straight classical formulas that already have the side effects mitigated by the other herbs in the formula. So if it's a very drying, cooling formula, you'll have warming and moistening herbs within the formula that still help you get to your goal, but mitigate the side effects of those herbs. And so you can start with that, and you can go as far as you want to bringing in multiple classical formulas at once to just doing basic little teas. So it gets wide open as far as how complex you want to get.
So you mentioned teas. Do you use tinctures as well?
Tinctures are available, pills, mm-hmm. Capsules. Decoctions is the most common used, mm-hmm. Where you take raw herbs and you boil them for a certain amount of time, and you drink the formula over a few days, and then make another bag. And the benefit is, you think of herbs have to face the same, we talked about this before, but the herbs have to face the same environment that you do. If they're from your local area, they're even going to be more adept to your environment, right? But they also have their natural trace minerals in there. They have, all of their compounds are in balance with each other. So when we hear about lab extracted herbs, maybe let's say, case in point, a pharmaceutical company in England once took Qinghao, Artemisia, and they knew that it was the chief herb on a large formula used for malaria in China. Well, they took the chief herb only and got rid of like 16 other herbs out of there. Then they took the herb itself and extracted it further down to what they thought was the most important constituent. And then when they administered it in Africa, it created a malaria-resistant strain.
Oh, boy.
But that's because nothing in there appreciated the whole scope of the patient or the fact that, yes, it's the chief herb, but just like you have a chief of a tribe, they're not doing all the work. So a formula is more like a family. Everybody's got a role. It's respected, and nobody's is more important than the other, because without one, it wouldn't be the formula, right? Hmm. And so the reductionist view, the linear view, starts to prove the same thing as when we treat one organ at a time, despite right. what it might do to another, is that in the end, there's a lot of losers, right?
Right.
And that, It's not seeing the system or appreciating the tools that we have at our disposal.
It's not holistic.
True.
Yeah. Acupuncture. I shared earlier before we came on the air that I actually had some experience with acupuncture way back in 1972. I don't remember the specifics. I think it was probably a headache or something. But how wide a scope of issues can you treat with acupuncture, Jeremy?
Yes. Everything.
Pretty much everything.
You can help everything.
Yeah, give us an example of somebody.
An example, if you're listening, I hope you're cool with this. A patient who had been pretty much tanked, had no energy 10 years after her third pregnancy. So 3 pregnancies in, and 10 years later, she's very fatigued, gaining a lot of water weight, and also can't hear very well. And that seems like a lot of big problems, but by basically using points on the body related to the kidney channel to reawaken in the adrenals, and then using points on the spleen channel to drain some excess fluid, using points on the urinary bladder channel, which is a very big channel that goes up the back, was able to unlock areas that had been closed down. Within a few months of doing acupuncture and then also taking a classical formula that was just a formula to build back resources. Nothing more special than that. She was able to start to hear again. She was able to hear her phone go off. She was able to hear crickets outside. And her energy level went from 2 out of 10 to 8 out of 10. But what it really was waking the body up, offloading excesses, bringing in the things it didn't have, and then the body does the rest. And it's amazing what happens when the body has what it needs. that's where we basically think from that perspective. Not the needles are magic, because they're not. They're just a device to access and bring awareness to certain channels or points.
Is it unblocking the flow of energy?
Sure. I mean, you can go to a person and press on a point that will almost bring them to their knees if you know enough about them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that point is congested. And the placing the needle is helping to...
Yeah.
It's like a ditch that got full of sand, right? There's no more flow through that ditch. So we open up that hole so that the water can flow through there again.
So this is based on an understanding of meridians.
Meridians, right. They're very practical, and they're on everybody. You can't hide.
They don't show up on an X-ray.
Well, they do show up recently. Someone, I think, in Russia injected a channel with a dye, and they've surely picked it up.
Mm-hmm.
It's subcutaneous. It's just under the skin, at least for the primary channels. Now, there are deeper channels, and there's a whole discussion about that. But the most superficial primary channels are just under the skin, and they just basically direct water and blood to all the extremities and all the organs so that they can do their function. When that blood and energy and water is not getting there, our organ cannot function properly.
Right.
And so, yeah.
I have a question. I know that in yoga, there are channels called nadi channels. Mm. Are they the same as the meridian channels or different?
I don't know
enough
about that. I have noticed, though, especially living in Asheville and learning this medicine here, that there are so many ways to describe everything.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these ancient arts, whether we're Ayurvedic or yogi, or they're all talking about... They're so overlapping.
Do you get into stuff like the chakras, or is that's very similar?
Yeah, I mean, it just if you see them all overlaid, it would just make even more sense,
mm-hmm.
right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Right.
A lot of the same understanding of the wisdom of the body, just from a different culture, different perspective.
Yeah.
Sure. And no less valuable at all.
Yeah.
Right.
Dietary medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that.
That was the main longevity medicine in China for the majority of its history. And that bleeds into herbal medicine. Herbal medicine is an offshoot, really, of dietary medicine, using plants to heal. A lot of plants are actually used as foods, right? We have ginger in a lot of our foods. Some cultures use a lot of ginseng in their food. The more you look at herbal medicine, the more you'll see that a lot of it's kitchen herbs. A great formula for helping calm the nervous system and... actually bring people out of mania or bring them up from depression is just a light wheat grain, a Chinese date, and licorice root. And they don't seem like they'd be much, but when the synergy of those three together is immense, and it can be stronger than even the practitioner expects.
And essential oils,
mm-hmm.
use those.
Yeah, so they're very pharmaceutical grade if you think about it. Like on one end, like a mint tea in a tea bag would be a very low dose of the oil, right? But then on the other end, if you had the essential oil, you wouldn't want to put that in your eye, right? It's very pharmaceutical. It can be dangerous, too. People should not be putting peppermint oil on kids because they're too hot in nature. It'll bring that heat to the surface and burn the skin from below. They all have their place, and sometimes once we get the principle of treatment in mind, we can employ the essential oil to do the same thing as the herbs.
Can you give an example of
neroli? Would be a great one. Yeah. It's the orange blossom. It has this wonderful effect on lifting the mood. But I've also known it to bring up the energy too much for someone with high blood pressure. So even it has to be thought of. You know, you still have to think about how often they should be using it. But in a way, more esoterically, we think of it as giving someone a hug. Because it's sweet, right? And hugs are sweet. And do we get enough touch in this society? Probably not.
Probably not.
A lot of people come to us, and one of their bigger issues is that they do not feel nourished. And so we can employ something like that, among other things, but just part of the package, to help them feel hugged and nourished and smell some sweetness in their life, you know? And what they'll start to notice, though, once they have that part, is they'll start to notice what takes them away from that. And that's where it gets interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
It may be the job, it may be the something about their house, it may be a friend, right? That's where it gets interesting, where they start to notice what it feels like to feel good again, and also knows what takes them away from that.
That must be gratifying for you when people come in and they complain about a problem, and you start working with them, and then they come back with these insights that they've gained about how they can make changes on their own.
Right.
Yeah.
It is about empowerment more than anything.
Yeah.
Empowerment and knowledge. And I really hope as when I'm seeing somebody that I'll see them more concentrated at first. And then, and this is true for any of the friends I know that, I mean, we don't want people to be having to come around all the time. We really want to get them as much information as they can, get them empowered to use it, give them the resources to get over the problem they're on now, but chart a new trajectory so that they don't have to be back in this place again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's very supportive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And another practice that you use is cupping,
right,
which I confess I know virtually nothing about. So,
mm-hmm. So the idea is basically just pulling the vacuum in a cup just pulls the skin, the fascia, and the cutaneous layers up and opens them and lets blood come. Because, you know, a lot of people's muscles, if they do the same repetitive work a lot, they have been layer after layer have just clamped down on each other.
So you have special cups you put on?
There's a wide range. Usually glass is the most common. But by pulling that cutaneous layer up, toxins can come out of the muscle. The liver can get activated to process those toxins. And once the toxins are out of the muscle, let's say lactic acid, well, once they're out, then blood can come back in. And mm-hmm. they shouldn't go back to that that old static state again, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Margaret.
Oh, I was just going to say I experienced that cupping technique one time, and I was surprised to see myself in the mirror a couple of days later with big circles on my back. And
badge of honor.
Wow.
I remember that. Yeah.
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 That's cupping.
But the good thing was that stuff was in your muscle,
mm-hmm.
and it was available. Not everybody gets bruising,
okay,
because not everybody has that old blood or lactic acid stuck in their muscle. And frankly, not everybody needs cupping, even though it's gotten very popular right now. Some people, especially if they're very deficient, do not need it.
I want to talk about some different kinds of treatments. You work with people in addiction, and I want to mention that when I was in early recovery, I had some acupuncture done for me.
On the ear, right?
Yeah, on the ear. Mm-hmm. So share a little bit about your experience working with people struggling to be free from addiction.
I know that in California, you cannot have a addiction treatment facility without offering that protocol right there that you're talking about, the NADA mm-hmm. ear protocol.
Mm-hmm.
It really brings people out of fight or flight more than anything.
Yeah.
It strengthens the organs that have been hit, let's say, by smoking or overthinking. It, you know, it targets them as well to help regenerate them. But in a large part, people are seeking out self-medication because they're always in overdrive. And that momentary, maybe 10, 15 minutes of not being in overdrive, lets the body know this doesn't have to be this way.
Mm-hmm.
There is a different way, right? And it's just like any kind of recovery. When you see a possibility, a new possibility, even if it's for those 10 minutes, then you know what to work for.
Right. And trauma, of course, is overlaid because most people who've been in addiction have been traumatized.
Sure.
If not all of them.
I have to say, it's been probably the most surprising part of learning the skills that I have is the number of people, the sheer volume of people that have experienced some kind of deep trauma. It's a little bit disheartening.
And you've already shared how some of what you do can help reduce inflammation in the limbic system. I don't know if that's the right way to put it.
Just overactivity of it.
Help to calm it down.
Right.
And obviously that's got to be critically important.
Huge, yeah. When the scientists saw that on the functional MRI, they were completely blown away.
Yeah.
They had no idea they could do that.
So just in general, talk about self-care, because that's really an underlying theme here, isn't it, Jeremy?
It is. And once people understand that they can, you know, use some simple kitchen herbs to warm their stomach up, or they can use some simple breathing techniques or Qigong to calm their nervous system when they're getting overworked or overexcited at work, it just starts to put more power in people's hands so they don't have to build up pathology over the years, but they could strip away pathology over the years. And the body can only handle so much. So,
yeah.
Before it starts to break.
And also, you help people wean themselves off of medications that they may have been on, either for mental health issues.
Yeah, or even hypertensive meds. Or that's if their doctor is on board with it.
Yeah.
This is not something that we do on our own, or that's only.
It's not a radical intervention.
No, this is by their request, mm-hmm. for sure. But we try to do this as professionally and you know, there are a lot of meds, we see it, there are a lot of meds that probably are shooting a little bit too hard, mm-hmm. that may be a result of not knowing other options, you know? And there are plenty of people that I've seen get their cholesterol under control with some simple formulas without having the high risk of stroke and heart attack that Lipitor gives, or the rhabdomyolysis muscle breakdown, or the kidney damage or liver damage.
And there's certainly a lot of people taking various medications like Xanax, sure. or and so on.
Right.
You can offer an alternative.
Lots of alternatives. And it's going to have to be catered to what their needs are. And most likely it's going to happen at the same time that they have a cold or a knee that hurts, and that'll be part of the treatment too. So you could, the beautiful thing is you can wrap a lot of disjointed symptoms together into a treatment pattern.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know you have some success stories that probably warm your heart. So in the last couple of minutes or so, maybe you might want to share, obviously we protect people's
privacy,
yeah. you know, privacy, but if you can think of one that really comes to mind.
I rather could think of a number that come to mind. Sun Simiao is a classical physician that is highly revered in Chinese medicine. Many people, myself included, feel a little bit of a kinship with him because he seemed like a very kind person. And he developed a grief treatment, and he just followed principles of opening the heart, relieving the grief from the lung. We didn't really talk about how each organ system has its own emotion, but basically relieving the heaviness, that burden from the chest, and purging the memory from the blood. There's all these thoughts, but anytime I've had someone come in and lay something really heavy on me and I had to take a breath at how heavy it was, that treatment lifted that weight in a way that I've never seen. And they immediately knew that there was a different way, and they immediately knew that something special had happened. And it was a great starting point for a lot of people who had experienced a complete violation of trust, right? And that in itself has been worth, you know.
And this has happened many times.
Many times.
Many times.
Many times.
What's your website, Jeremy?
Well, we have silverleafnatural.com. That's our Silverleaf Natural Medicine website. Also, of course, Facebook, mm-hmm. probably Instagram if you want to go there. So,
and it's Jeremy Noble, N-O-B-L-E.
That's right.
Yeah. And in the minute or so we have left, are there any particular points that you want to make that we haven't stressed yet about Chinese medicine and the work you do?
I would just encourage people to keep an open mind that there's a lot that even after studying for 6 years, there's a lot a practitioner doesn't know. A practitioner of 30 years doesn't know. There's probably 2% of Chinese medical texts that are even translated into English. So let's all just keep an open mind because we have a lot to learn from each other.
Yeah. Well, I think that's one of the things I'm appreciating about you, Jeremy, is you don't come in here with the attitude of like, I know everything there is to know. And that's very refreshing.
Yeah.
So I want to thank you so much, Jeremy Noble, for coming in and spending time with us this
week.
Thank
you so much for having me.
It's
I enjoyed
been it. Very, very insightful. And make sure you tune in next week, folks. Our guest is going to be Jessica Ringel, who is an author and who's come out with a new book she's going to talk about. The topic is going to be finding forgiveness and compassion for oneself and others. So that'll be coming up next week. So thanks very much for joining me. You've been listening to A Mindful Emergence on WPVM FM 103.7 in Asheville, North Carolina. Appreciate you joining us and look forward to seeing you next week.